Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Four Center podcast feed. I'm Joseph Scrimshaw.
I'm Ken Napsok.
And this is the Mandalorian Report. Today, we are going to be talking about Chapter 2, The Child. I don't even know if there's a colon in there. But I just threw it in, and Ken's throwing in the music. Man, you already got your money's worth.
Yeah.
If you paid for this podcast. Anyway, we are going to dive into talking about The Child. Man, there's a lot to talk about in this episode, in my humble opinion, so we're going to dive into it. This is the episode that really, really introduced us to Baby Yoda.
Man.
So that has to be celebrated immediately.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about all facets of Baby Yoda, from the cuteness to the power. Yes. This is going to be spoiler full. Yeah. But I also wanted to ask you, Ken, just to get started, because we're still talking about not only the show, but the experience of Disney Plus, of this new way of getting Star Wars. So what was your experience watching this episode? Were you there like right away when refreshing it as it was So I was traveling and heading to Washington, D.C. to do comedy with Mark Ellis, and Christian Ruvicabla, the Wanger Show, was with us. He was doing some tech. He was taping himself, setting the scene, only to say we had planned our big night and our two nights in D.C. Our first night was going to be spent watching Mandalorian in my hotel room. So our flight got delayed, emergency landing in Phoenix, and me and Christian were in Phoenix Airport for 10 hours. Ellis said his flight was different. He got there. You know, I'm sure at one point in your life, you're always, you know, stuck in an airport. You experience that. I was trying to sleep face down on a backpack and couldn't do it. And all of a sudden, it was like 6:01 and I went, wait a minute. I think there's a Mandalorian out.
Like 6:01 in the morning.
Yeah. 6:01 a.m. Phoenix time. Right. So I watched it on my phone first and with headphones.
So you just pulled it up and it was there. And
it was there.
They were great. Nice.
And I'll talk a little bit later about how that affected my first thoughts on the episode compared to watching it later. We plugged an HDMI into a laptop and watched it on a big hotel room screen.
Yeah.
Different experience. So, so there's a weird, like, God, Star Wars exists and I can watch a new episode on my phone. Weirdness.
Yes.
But then finding it, I know, and I was seeing our Discord server, our Discord for Force Centered. If you can get that through our Patreon page, and people are like, do you got it? Do you got it? And it's still a week two, not worked out.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's the, there was the question of when it was going to drop, right? Because the first, the launch of all of Disney Plus was like, it'll be available at midnight. And then we heard rumors that, oh, maybe that actually means a few hours before. And so it was. So then you're going into the second week going, is that going to be the deal for every episode? Of like, it's midnight, but actually that means this time. And then it didn't seem that way. And it, you know, got around to midnight at Pacific time. And I was watching a couple of Twitter threads. And then the Mandalorian account, the official one on Twitter, tweeted out, it's here now. And it was sad because there was a lot of anger and pain, but it was also very funny. It was just a thread of people swearing, and every gif that you can find to call someone a liar was used in response, because it was popping up mostly on people's mobile devices immediately, but everybody was, you know, reporting in, not Xbox yet, not PS4 yet, not Roku yet. And other people were like, I'm getting in. And I refreshed. It got to the point of like, it was 1 a.m. for me.
1 a.m.?
And I didn't see it. And so
Thursday into Friday night.
Yep. Okay. So, like, officially released, they tweeted that it was released. Mm. So then I was like, should I just rewatch the first episode? And I was like, wait a minute. No. If I fast forward to the end of the first episode, maybe these algorithms that want to make me watch the next episode will finally be helpful.
Ooh.
And yeah, it rolled into the next episode before the rest of my system would admit that it existed.
You used algorithms to your favor.
I did. I used the power of algorithms. So now I feel like when midnight hits, even if it's not ready to show me that episode three is there, I'll just fast forward to the end of episode two and hopefully it'll roll into episode three.
Good to know. Wow. Yeah.
But it is good definitely like, it is a testament to the power of that episode that as soon as it started in The Mandalorian in general, like that I forgot all of the annoyance.
Yeah.
You know, it really is like, you know, I don't know if you've ever had hard time opening up the plastic on a DVD or a video game. Like, there's fun in here.
Yeah.
I can't
get to the fun.
Sealed
packages.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's me in a gas station sandwich trying to get in before the red light changes.
Well, picture that if you're having a hard time with getting Mandalorian to load. Picture Ken fighting with a sandwich from 7-Eleven. So that was the experience getting into it, and yet the episode itself I found quite joyful. Let's talk about overall reaction. You said you were influenced by seeing it small in the Arizona airport.
Yeah. I mean, I say that at just a little context that could very well affected my viewing. When I ended the first one, I thought I didn't like it and was on the flight. The first viewing of chapter two, I went, I don't know. I don't think I liked that. And had a lot of time on the plane. Not, I didn't watch it again. I knew we were going to watch it that night. I was also trying to sleep. And I got to tell you, when I watched it the second time, I don't know what switched. This is why I preach in this era of what's your rating and give us this and do a reaction video. So sometimes you got to let it weigh on you a little bit and you got to dig in. And the second viewing, I went, this was better than anything I could have expected from this show going in, not just this episode, but the series.
Okay.
And now I love it.
What do you think it was? Do you think it was just your mood and the setting affecting you? What, the second time you also got to watch it with friends, so it was a communal experience, right?
Friends are good, and had a good good dinner in my belly. It was, you know, all that factors in. That's why I bring it up. I don't just bring it up to tell a story about air travel, but the context. But I got to, when it ended, I went, this is what they're doing. Yeah. Oh, okay. And then you kind of, you release yourself from the expectations of this isn't a show with a bunch of characters and dialogue and shooting and fighting and Game of Thrones in space. This is a tone poem. This is a stanzas in a song. And then I went, oh, this is braver than I thought they would do. And I now I love it.
Okay, cool.
Yeah,
cool.
If that makes sense.
It does make sense because I think it is, it has something in common to me with the first couple of viewings of Rogue One, where on the surface there is so much that is literally familiar.
Yeah.
Like, because it is the same aliens, the same ships, the same creatures, and specifically things that Star Wars fans have hungered for. Right?
Absolutely, right.
More of the gritty, more of the, you know, the fighting and the,
That grit.
We got that grit. And yet what it's in service of is incredibly different than the Star Wars that we've seen before.
Mm-hmm.
So then that whole cocktail of new and old that I always ramble about.
Yeah.
It's the new, I think the new sneaks up on you because on the surface, so much of it feels familiar.
Yeah. Yeah. And then it's not.
It's not. No,
it's not. And no, that's what I love.
It's using, here's my latest in my endless Star Wars food analogies.
Love it.
It is using the same ingredients to cook something different. It's like,
makes sense.
How did you make soup out of only ingredients for pizza?
And I got to tell you something. That's once again, you're saying some really, really smart and easily digestible terminology there. I have been slightly grumpy with some folks who are like, I love the show. No, I shouldn't. I love people loving Star Wars.
Yeah.
This is the Star Wars I've always wanted.
Right.
And I'm like, but it's not. You're stopping. You're eating appetizers. And it has all the ingredients that are there. But this is not a continuation. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
I get it. So I got to find myself not fighting people when they say they love Star Wars. But I want them to dig deeper. Because it's all there. It's all through the threads of the show. And it isn't just blasting Jawas, which is fun.
Oh, yeah.
So you know what I mean? So no, that makes sense.
Yeah.
They're like, this lasagna is great. Well, actually, it's this.
Turns out it's an apple pie made out of lasagna. I guess I'm just really hungry today. Yeah. Another thing that people have been talking about a lot, and we'll get into lots of different details, but I want to do this overview stuff, the length. Mm. I think people are surprised. You're the second person I've talked to recently who said Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
That there was some bubbling expectation that I think I wasn't as aware of, that this was going to be like Game of Thrones in some way. And I think that people were picturing something epic and complex.
Yeah.
And I don't think I ever was, which probably gives me some benefit. I didn't think it would be as super focused on The Mandalorian as this is, where we almost never get a scene without him unless it's 30 seconds to hype his entrance.
Yes. Which so is true.
With the Jawas and cool there. The only reason we don't see him is because it's going to be more awesome when we see him.
Because we had highlighted that choice of the storytelling so much in episode one. When Quill, I think is what his name
Quill,
is now,
yeah.
But cool is
like saying Quill.
I when that scene happened, I go, oh God, we're going to do a scene with that. Oh no, he's walking up.
Nope. It's just to set up the awesome return of the Mandalorian.
And to be clear, like when people like hey, this is the Star Wars I've always wanted. If you're feeling that, I want you to continue to feel that. I just think it's sometimes used as a dig at the movies of the last couple of years that I just take a little bit of offense at because you're not, it's not, it's actually more in line with the new films to me in terms of how they dig into the themes and play with the themes and connect it back to George's original heart and story and words.
Yeah.
Versus I think people, when they say that, they're like, just, you know, the gritty underworld badass. Like that's really not what we're getting.
Yeah. We're getting the trappings of that. That's the world that this character is traveling in.
Yeah.
But it's not necessarily what's at stake.
Correct.
Yeah. So for me, the length.
Oh yeah, sorry.
It's fine.
A length, yeah.
That's fine. So the length doesn't bother me the more I sit with it, because I mean, when it first ended, I was like, oh, are they all going to be around half an hour? And there's that greedy part of you that just was like, I want more Star Wars. I was really enjoying this, but I'm so happy to have something that is truly different in that it is very, very focused on this one character right now. Mm. Maybe it'll expand. It's very minimal and really, really not overstaying its welcome, yes, or padding in any way to get to an arbitrary, yeah, length. And also not being indulgent, because I just feel like, as a viewer and also as a writer, I'm not going to name them because I don't want to be negative, but there are a couple of shows that I truly like on streaming, mm-hmm, where I have a hard time watching them because I've got a red pen in my mind going, mm-hmm, you established that, mm-hmm, three scenes ago. I don't need it reiterated.
Yeah.
And it's just too, and I really appreciate something that's like, we know exactly what we want to say, we're going to, yeah, say it, and we're going to be done.
It's an excellent point. Into the Game of Thrones thing, I think it's just that natural thing of like, oh, you know, everyone's trying, every streaming service is trying to get their Game of Thrones, quote unquote. And this was Disney Plus's Lucasfilm's version of that. So I think you naturally can run. Then you meet all the cast and then you meet all the, you know,
right,
the characters. And you're like, oh, and you start thinking, well, they're all going to interact and it's going to be, and they very, very well could. This could be the slow roast and opening to a big rock song that's coming. Yeah. You know, we're breaking into the chorus in a bit.
Watch this whole, yeah, you know, everybody's talking about Wrestling with a Half Hour and the next episode's going to be like, right, 2 hours long.
And I think when the episode ended and I was in the airport, I'm like, wait, did I fall asleep and miss 15 minutes? And I realized it's about 28, 29 minutes of story credits, taking about 32. What you just said kind of touched on what I thought once I thought about it. They did everything they needed to do, yep, in this episode, and that's all I want.
Yeah. 'Cause it's called Chapter 2. The Child,
yeah,
and it's about the relationship between Mando and the Yoda baby, Yabby.
Yeah.
And it starts with them together, him trying to get him off world. Mm-hmm. It ends with him getting off world, and it ends with the child waking up, reassuring Mando that it's still alive and still safe. Alive. Obviously, there's some big plot things like that whole Force thing, but like that's the arc of the episode, and that's what this chapter is about.
Yeah.
Period.
100%.
You and I also both talked about the video game aspect of that first chapter.
Yeah.
So that was in my mind when I was watching it, and I was so entertained that, like, this continues to absolutely be a video game. This was literally an escort mission, and then I yelled at my screen, like, when it was happening, like, oh my God, the Jawas are going to give him a side quest.
Yeah,
and they totally did. They gave him a side quest and it had the emotional impact.
The Suka
side quest had the emotional impact on the Mandalorian that side quests often do on, yeah, actual gamers of like, I'm trying to get, okay,
yeah,
I have to go rescue the acorn of life in order for you to give me the rake of fate. All right, fine. And it's, yeah,
thoughts on that egg.
Oh, the Suka was great. Mm. So yeah, my overall reaction is just that I the more I sit with this episode, I've now watched it three times, twice by myself and once with my wife, and watching her heart break and, yeah, reform over Yoda baby.
Mm-hmm.
Man, I'm continuing to like it more and more, that it is really different and really specific and really its own thing.
Specific's a great way to describe it. It is just narrow focused on what it needs to do.
Yeah.
So I love that.
You're enjoying it more and more.
Yeah, I've seen the episode four times now.
Oh wow. Okay.
And yes, I can't. I'm here. We're doing a review show on it. I can't quite put my finger on it, which makes for great review content. But I just, when it ends now, or when it starts, and I just see that baby and the egg floating behind with that Bluetooth connectivity there.
Yeah,
I just get a warm feeling, man. It's a classic Western trope: the gruff guy and the baby. You, sir, on the Collider review made the reference to Raising Arizona. I thought that no one's picking up on that. That is great.
There's
callback.
A Coen Brothers sense of, yeah, humor about it, mm-hmm, right? Of like this is kind of absurd that I am absolutely fighting for my life.
Yeah,
while this cute mewling thing just kind of stares at me.
There's a lot of humor.
What's the deal? And it's comedy also with the point, because it is about the bond, yeah, they're building.
And Rick Fayama, his name is a tongue twister for me. He directs this one.
Yeah.
And our good friend Andres Cabrera is the one who let me know, and a lot of viewers over on Jedi Council know, hey, Dope, I hadn't seen Dope. He's like, Dope's actually, it's serious, but it's funny.
Okay.
And expect some humor from Rick. And this episode, the Jawas throwing the metal pieces down to try to knock him, and it's really funny.
It's hilarious.
But it's a big, tense battle. Like, anyways, there's just a lot of things in this episode, the more I think about it, I love.
Well, then let's dive into our favorite things. Do you have, like, a favorite big thing, or we can dive into lots of little small things? Where are you at?
Favorite big thing. I mean, it'd be hard for me to not say the big force moment. I don't know if that's in your mind, too. I actually got emotional the second time watching it.
Really?
I'm not talking balling in Mark Ellis's arms, but, like, it's a pretty powerful moment. And it's pretty well done, though. You know, the Mudhorn's just trying to defend its egg, so I do feel sorry for the Mudhorn.
Ties into the sort of the theme of like, hey, protecting youth. Okay,
yeah,
yep.
I kind of knew it was coming, right? Because the first moment, trying to heal him,
I feel like most people were like, the questions hanging over this, because we've only seen this species twice before, and they're both force users.
Both force, right? Yes.
So that's the big one. Heavy in the air.
It was because I loved the two or three shots that they cut to the Baby Yoda's point of view.
Right.
And they're watching him, and you get a sense that this creature, 50, that's been around a long time, but a baby, picks up on all the people in its life. This one is got something worth saving in a way.
Okay.
Like, it's watching the Mando saving me, this creature saving me. I'm connected to it. And I see what it's trying to do. It's watching him get crunched by the Mudhorn and destroyed. You cut to some of the views and you cut to the face. And so it's like, it isn't just force power in use. It's like, I'm going to give this to this person. I'm going to use this. This person needs this help. But it was
right.
It was the force, and that's the force, right? You know.
Yeah, yeah. You can. So I love that. It's open to lots of interpretation. Mm. How you kind of emotionally get into that moment.
Yeah.
And you know what you're talking about is almost what I'm hearing is that almost identifying with the Mandalorian and knowing that pain of being like, I'm trying to do what's right.
Right.
I'm trying to do my job, and my ass has been handed to me, and I am on my knees. And we all know that moment when you're feeling that bad and someone comes to pick you up, right?
Yeah.
It's like, this is a weird analogy, but like the Spider-Man 2 moment where, you know, all the New Yorkers surround him and, you know, people kind of make fun of it. It's an easily, you know, memeable moment. Like, you want him, you got to come through us. But like that moment where you think you are totally alone and you are not. And somebody comes to help you, and it just happens to be a 50-year-old baby with a force.
Yeah, my final note on that is the Mando grabs his knife and just kind of holds it up, almost as if I'm going to die.
Right, of just like, if I happen to get, I'm just going to hold this in front of me and hope that it spears itself.
I'm dead, but basically.
Or I'm going to take it with me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And to get saved in that moment, and it's just a great reveal of something that, you could see was coming, but it was great. It was so well shot and directed,
And for me, I think part of what hit me emotionally about it is how much of it is just empathy. Mm-hmm. How much is it just that incredibly cute little baby sensed pain and naturally was trying to get out of its little floating baby basket to heal it, continues to sense pain.
Yeah.
On maybe some deep level, or maybe just an intuitive level that I think all creatures have of empathy, of sensing pain and desperation in, you know, that you can imagine that this baby is not old enough to be making any sort of pros and cons of like, well, it'll take a lot out of me, but this guy's a good egg, no pun intended, and I'll save him.
Yeah.
But more just that, like, I sense his pain and I sense the horror that's coming from him. I also, you know, saw the Mudhorn hit him five times, three times. So just reach out to just stop. It's so pure and Jedi-like.
Yeah.
Not like the baby 100%. Knows the Jedi code or whatever, but it's just so like, stop. Don't hurt him anymore.
Yeah.
Really cool.
That was my favorite big moment.
I think for me, my favorite big overall thing about this episode was getting to see even more of who the Mandalorian is, and in particular, this really Indiana Jones everyday person, right? Because it's told in a super cool way about a guy in armor whose weapons are a part of his religion. He's got a flamethrower and cool blaster, and he's a badass. He's got ingenuity. He's got skill. But also, he's just trying to get from point A to point B, and everyone and everything that can kick his ass is going to.
Yeah.
In that he's just trying to keep going. It's got that charm of Indiana Jones of just like, I don't crave adventure.
Yeah.
I just want the thing. Yeah, if I could walk into the temple, solve a few puzzles, and walk out with the thing,
I'm good.
That's what I want.
Yeah.
I don't want to be dragged behind your car.
Yeah.
I don't want to throw a Nazi into a propeller. I have to. And it's not fun.
Yeah.
And I'm in great pain. So I think that element of his character coming out, that it's doing his job, is a point of pride, it seems, in a necessity, but it's not any sort of like, you know, there's no element of like, I feel like Boba Fett's character as he exists in current canon is cocky, right?
Yeah.
And you could see a Boba Fett story where he does do snarky, gotcha, asshole kind of quips. And I just kind of feel like that's not what the Mando is about. Like, it's weird to watch this incredibly odd space fantasy and be able to relate to it and go like, I feel like that some days when I'm just like, I need to finish my writing and pick my wife up at work. Those are my goals for the day.
That's it.
But in between this email and this phone call and there's a screw in my tire and to have it be that kind of relatable while it still being an absurd space fantasy is awesome.
It's just an office comedy.
really is.
Yeah.
It really is. You already talked about the egg chant, suka, suka, just for small moments. Everything with the Jawas, them laughing at him, that little obnoxious laugh, which goes to building his character too. We all know what that feels like to be like, it's like little kids laughing at you. That's like you're walking down the street and you trip and you, 50 kids around you go, that obnoxious little Jawa laugh they have. So great.
My favorite smaller moment was, and there's a lot of little ones, a lot of ones with Quill and everything, but they do the whole egg chant, everything. They're in the crawler. Minutes have passed in the show, but also 40 minutes in real life, and the one Jawa just looks up at him, Suka, just brings it up again. Like, I just love that he's just like, Suka, egg, you're gonna bring us to the egg, right?
We're doing the egg thing. What did you think the egg was going to be? Did you think it was just going to be a tasty treat for the Jawas, or were you surprised by that?
No, I thought it was going to be something of great value and something they would worship or something like that.
Yeah.
And it fades to that for like a beat. You're like, oh, they're going to, oh, nope, it's a snack.
It's just a tasty, tasty treat.
Which could be, you know, an important snack in their culture. Yeah. But
I think probably my favorite small beat is Mando shaking his head when he realizes they just want to scarf the egg.
Yes.
Like, I did all that.
All that.
So you guys could have a yummy treat, you little a-holes. One other favorite small thing to mention is the servitude lines from Quill.
Yeah.
When he's talking about a man I was offering him to come with, but particularly when he's saying, I have, worked for a lifetime, so I don't have to be, you know, a part of servitude.
I'm
paraphrasing there. But that idea that, like, not only do I want to be left alone, but... you know, hey, you came here, you're my guest, I'll help you, but I don't want to serve anybody, gives weight to I have spoken.
Yeah.
I have spoken was charming and intriguing in the first chapter, but knowing that, like, he did some Bespin type thing or something it for, or maybe even worse, for however many decades Ugnaughts live.
Yeah.
Now he's an old Ugnaught, and he's like, nobody else is going to tell me what to do. I have spoken. Gives it a little bit more oomph now.
Quill is such a great character. In every moment, almost every line works as this kind of mentor role.
Yeah.
But the Jawas don't destroy. They,
steal. They don't destroy.
Yeah. I thought it was interesting. Yeah, just everything has a little weight to his moments, and I loved it.
Yeah, just lots of wisdom.
Yeah, even when he's like telling him, you know, Mando's like, oh, this is rebuilding the ship's going to take days. And he's like, if you're willing to help, not so much. Like, everything about it. That's a great character.
The guy who, he's a good life coach. I think that's what we're getting to. So let's talk about some of the big canon revelations or impacts to sort of larger Star Wars canon and what we're going to learn in The Mandalorian. So Yoda baby has the Force.
Yeah.
So how, in a way it's not a surprise, right? Cause now we're three for three for whatever this species is. I talked to at least one friend who was like, why did it have to be the Force? Like, that's the story that's being told. Obviously, it's not a minor detail. It's not like a little subplot. I think that's going to be a huge part of the plot.
Yeah.
But how were you affected in thinking of larger Star Wars? Like, you love that moment in the humanity of it, but what does it mean for Star Wars if this is this rare species and they are all Force users?
I mean, I haven't focused on that. I'm literally looking at a Yoda 3D print my cousin made for me over in the corner there. The ramifications of that and why Dr. Pershing everyone wants the character is something I haven't wrapped my head around fully, other than it's pretty powerful. But I saw a tweet. Someone tweeted me, I can't believe they're using the Force. It's kind of a crutch in Star Wars. And I'm like, it's Star Wars.
Yeah.
Star Wars, even though I'm someone it's about the rebellion and versus the Empire for me in a lot of ways. The Star Wars, the core of it is the Force, and Dave Filoni's involved. And you can't tell me, I'm not surprised at all. And the fact that I go to that scene with Mando and Quill, where he says, tell me again what happened.
Yeah.
And they both don't really understand it.
Right.
In a world that's post-Jedi and post-Force being a thing, is this series have to do with what does the Force mean to the rest of the galaxy? And what do you learn from it? I don't know.
Right, right.
That was a bigger ramification for me. Two other than now we might know that the Yukugals have Force or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
But that's important too.
Oh yeah. Yeah. No, I think those are both two of the biggest questions, and those lines are fascinating. Guessing for future episodes. Yeah. So now we've seen the Trandoshans, who had a tracking fob as well. Yeah. Right. And they were checking out the him getting this assignment.
Right. Right. True.
At the cantina there with Greef Karga. So, the Nikto were holding the baby, but IG-11 had orders to kill it.
Kill it.
Then the Trandoshans had orders to kill it.
Yeah.
Even the client, Werner Herzog, seemed like, I know you're probably going to have to kill it. And it was Dr. Pershing was like, no. So we have, depending on how many people sent it out, we certainly have motivation for creepy Dr. Pershing wants it alive.
Yeah.
Other people want it dead. Does that all track for you? If it is not known by a lot of people in the galaxy, but some movers and shakers are aware, these things are Force sensitive and extremely powerful. We've got a line on one. We don't want their kind in our business. Kill it.
Mm-hmm.
And other people are like, it's young. It can be manipulated or cloned or, you know, let's science the midichlorians out of this little guy. Any number of creepy things. Is it track to you if it is really sort of absolutely a MacGuffin like that?
It does, because there's a lot of theories going around, a lot of questions, and people want to know predictions, right? The biggest one I have is who else is sending people after this thing, and that's the bigger... It's not just Greef Karga backstabbing, you know, Mando. It could be part of it, but that seems to be... There seems to be some very heaviness in every time you realize someone else sent these people out.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So who that person is the big question to me. And then exactly what you're saying. Is it a tool? Is it a power? Something to be studied? Can I keep hearing the joke of extracting midichlorians? Is it that scientific? Or is it, you know, with this weapon, this nuclear football almost literally going, we could control the galaxy.
Yeah.
Once more. Like, I think there's... That's the big question for me. Who wants this baby? I think it will be revealed, but who wants it?
Yeah, I think really looking at it, other people looking at Yoda baby. We look at Yoda baby as an adorable sentient creature.
Yeah.
But other people looking at it as a weapon, if it's young enough, it can be manipulated in some way, or it just needs to be taken off the table, is really interesting to me, because we haven't seen that perspective on other people's reaction to the Force and Force users as much. We've seen like Palpatine try to, you know, kidnap babies or people try to, you know, anyway.
Yeah.
But that particular idea of it, this idea of what they know of the Forces, I really want to dig into this one with you.
Really interesting to me.
Right. Because, you know, to me, there's a lot of time in the Old Republic or the Republic of the sort of prequel era where people are aware Jedi exist. They are a part of the galaxy. But I think there's still plenty of room for people to doubt the power unless they encounter them. Otherwise, they can just be sanctimonious monks who know some cheap tricks and they've got their lightsabers and they're kind of... I can see a character like Quill living his whole life in hearing stories about the Jedi, but then also living through the propaganda of it was all lies. They're traitors. And don't even speak of them. Don't think about them. So there's that in terms of the Jedi, of how the galaxy perceives them on like Quill's side of it. What do you think about what Quill thinks of it all?
I was really surprised in a very pleasant way that he didn't know, that he wasn't like, oh, that's the Force at work.
Right.
That he was like, tell me again. I don't understand what you're... He held the thing in place? That thing? Because even, you know, the beginning, you know, when he sees it, like, that's what all the fuss is about, this little baby? As he eats the frog.
Another huge canon revelation.
Yeah.
The species is capable of eating things whole and digesting.
That's what Yoda went down to Dexter's Diner for.
What was in the stew?
Plate of frogs, live, I will have. So I was blown. I'll say this. I was blown away. I hyperbole included. I was blown away that Quill didn't know.
Yeah.
Because Mando, I think he gets a sense that he knows. Not that he's hiding that he knows, but he just like he witnessed it. Number one, he's been around the galaxy. He can probably imagine, but just like maybe seeing it up front.
Yeah.
Maybe believing. Maybe the Mando's going to have to believe some things he didn't believe before. Not to make it entirely like a Han Solo story, but you know, like. That, but I was more intrigued by this world-weary guy who clearly did not grow up or not live on Arvala 7 all his life, but he went there to find peace, the Ugnaught. I'm surprised that he wouldn't be like, pleasantly surprised he wouldn't be like, oh, here's what it is.
It makes him a different kind of mentor character.
Really?
Because, you know, a lot of our mentors have been, you know, Force users, or even Maz Kanata, who like, you know, she's not a Force user, but she's a Force feeler.
Yeah.
She's a Force talker for sure. So that makes Quill different. The Mando is really interesting to me because that's either saying something about the Mandalorian's cultural memory of Jedi.
Right.
Or an opinion about them, or a bearing of it, because they went through entire wars with Jedi. Their armor is partially constructed to combat Jedi abilities. So to have somebody who seems relatively steeped in Mandalorian culture go, I don't know what that is. You know, is that the memory of Jedi has become like, they weren't actually, they were more full of themselves. They weren't actually that powerful. They're, you know, they're bossy a-holes who wanted everyone to do things the way they thought they should. And they had a couple parlor tricks, but that's to grow up with that story versus seeing what you thought was a tiny defenseless infant save your life with massive amounts of power.
As you're talking, I'm like, he would know of the Darksaber. He would know that our relatives, our ancestors fought them. So is it because he's a foundling, or we're going to learn more about that wrinkle? We don't really know. Yeah. Although, you know, but even then you got the armor. You're going back to the armorer to get more of your man. You know.
Yeah.
You know.
He was alive during the Clone Wars, obviously, where the Jedi were, you know, publicly in the holonet. So, like, it's not about knowledge of these Jedi existing. It's about how they're seen in the galaxy and how successful the propaganda of the Empire.
Yeah.
Or the, you know, perceptions of the Mandalorian culture might be. So that's why I'm feeling like it's not just about this one, you know, Yabby MacGuffin using the Force. It's going to be a little bit about the state of the Force in the galaxy.
Yes.
If we're to believe Luke, the Force is a little bit more in balance now.
Yeah.
You know, there aren't a ton of dark side users super perverting the Force by grabbing more and more and more and killing and manipulating. Yep. It's just, you know, people trying to get by in the galaxy.
Is him looking back at the, well, it's because he, you know, was he hurt? I don't think physically. He totally has grasped what's going on, but is there a fear? Is there a, oh no, this could mean a lot more? Like, I know what the galaxy, you know, is it dawning on him the importance of this now?
Yeah.
I'm holding this future or dark future or whatever, you know, it's like, is it all dawning on the Mando and then all that? Oh crap, all the stories I heard were true then. You know,
I wonder if it's almost more that of like, I don't know, either, you know, if it is almost more like in a real world scenario of, yes, we've all heard stories of aliens and abduction.
Yeah.
And like if somebody was watching a TV show of us podcasting right now and then aliens came and you and I were shocked and people watching were like, well, they know about aliens. They've been told.
And told
repeatedly about abductions, but it would for us, it would still be like a
that's great.
Is this real? Yeah. What are the implications of this being truly real?
Yeah,
what are the implications for me right now being the one involved in this situation if this is all true beyond anything I ever imagined?
It goes beyond to just the at the end of the episode ends with Quill saying, you know, I hope you get the reward. I have spoken. Yay, neat line. We love it. But the look, well, not the look on his face, the blank stare on the man's face, but it's like, it's not just, am I going to accept this award or save the baby? That's part of the story.
Yeah.
But that goes back to that moment to me where it's like, he realizes I'm on a job that's way bigger.
Way bigger. What are the implications?
Who is behind this? What's going to happen next to me? Yeah, beyond just returning it and going, give me my money.
Yeah, yeah. Wanted to talk a little, just briefly, you mentioned the planet name, Arvala 7, is on the StarWars.com data bank under Quill's entry, is where I saw that confirmation of what that planet is called, that it's not Tatooine. I did some deep diving on the old Jawas. And this is definitely just a, hey, let's, you know, a lot of previous Star Wars stuff has said, Jawas are mostly native to Tatooine, and the Sandcrawlers are old mining equipment that got left behind. And I have seen some people grumbling of like, Jawas and Sandcrawlers are just on every sand planet. but these ones do have red eyes, and the ones in the original trilogy, sometimes they look a little red, but they're everywhere that lists them. It's yellow.
Yellow, yeah.
They have mostly yellowish eyes. And for me, I don't really care that they're Jawas different places. Like, for me, that's a headcanon thing of like, there's a giant mining company that tried to mine a bunch of sand planets, and they left these sand crawlers behind. Some Jawas. Maybe Jawas started Tatooine. Maybe they started some ancient other planet, and they got on some freighters. They like sand planets. Like this mining equipment, so be it.
Maybe there was a fight and one clan went one way and the other way went the other. I'm like you. That's that canon checklist storytelling that's not interesting to me, where it's just like, cool, all right, it's another planet, more Jawas.
Yeah, and to me, it's that spirit of instead of asking why, why not? It'd be cool, right? I don't want this to be on Tatooine for lots of reasons, sure. And I've been thinking about this as Jon Favreau since I was 6 years old.
Yeah.
And wished I had 50 Jawas to fight Boba Fett action figures.
Yeah.
Why not? Let's have some fun with it. Not be locked into like, but in the book Star Wars, absolutely everything you need to know, it was I'm all for canon, and there's certain canon disruptions that would bother me if it's just like a direct contradiction.
Right.
But being willing to expand the canon and change what had been a perception is fine with me, especially if it's in the spirit of something fun and cool.
Because if it's on Tatooine, not only are we just on Tatooine again, but you might be locked into some story elements you don't want to deal with.
Yeah.
You know, because that planet does have some importance. But yeah, maybe, yeah.
Got Cobb Vanth running around in the armor.
Cobb Vanth's
armor, possibly.
Stinky the Hutt out there trying to take over.
Oh, yeah. All sorts of things going on there. And I should also mention there is a Black Series Jawa labeled as the Off-World Jawa right now that came out with some other Mandalorian stuff.
That's a little bit of
nod towards like, the Tatooine's their home base, but they get around.
They got a cruiser. Found some Rontos elsewhere.
Yep. Some other Rontos. Disintegrations. How did you feel about finally seeing Disintegrations? Speaking of canon,
I loved it. I loved it more the second and third time. I liked the first time. I think it's awesome. It's one of those little, like, I hadn't even thought about that. I did not grow up wondering what disintegrations in Star Wars were like, you know? He just didn't want Boba Fett to kill them. That's all I thought of it. And so the Trandoshan one, I went, whoa.
Yeah.
But it was the Jawas one that I was laughing with joy. And that's not right, because I don't even know if those Jawas deserved it. But the one that's trying to hold up the metal plate.
Occupational hazard for Jawas, though. You steal people's ships, rip them apart.
And the one shooting at them. And the one how poor Jaw was. We saw it. We have an answer.
Yeah.
It's pretty violent and awesome.
I'm sure there are other places in canon, but not as clear as this. A part of the detail I loved is we've been looking at those bolts, right?
Yes.
On people's clothing.
Right.
And to me, it's not like, oh, they're all disintegrators.
Right.
Where Gentile's has those on his leg, too, because he also disintegrates people. Like, I like the idea that they're some sort of ammo, and they do lots of different things. But these it was just a joy to have somebody reach down and take those off their body and load a weapon and do something with them. And it's those little details that continue to connect me to this is being made by people who have spent decades going, what if? And it's a delight to see.
It is. And that is kind of it's an interesting conversation maybe we'll have later about how this show's, I don't know, the show's not, I don't want to say getting away with, but there was a lot of scorn heaped on Rogue One at points. A lot of scorn in some of these other movies in Solo of, ugh, I get it. It's a thing from a thing. And here the show is literally almost every frame is like, remember that thing?
Yeah.
It's a thing. And people are like, yay! And I think, I hate to sound like a bitter at it. Again, people who love Star Wars, I don't care why, love it. And I'm going to celebrate it with you. But you know what I mean? Like the ATSD joke that those YouTubers in Wisconsin started, like it made it bad that to have something in a Star Wars movie that you saw before. And this entire series is based around those questions, and I'm loving it. Everyone's loving it. Side conversation we'll deal with one day of why the movies don't get that leeway as the show is.
Well, I'll just say it is a compliment to this show, and you know, we can talk about the other thing of like, hey, sometimes things just pop up and they are. Pwn De Baba and Dr. Everson is like, cool, fun.
Yeah.
Because the director likes them. But this feels like I want to do more with the Jawas.
I want to
know that they have patio furniture. I want to know that they have a cruel mocking laughter. Yeah. Like we're learning more. It's not a checklist.
Yeah.
They're doing things that they haven't done before, which is exciting. Talking about the theme of the episode, we touched on a little bit that for me, one of the big thematic ideas was this bond between Mando and the Yoda baby, that was really what it was about, which gets into just the kind of larger Star Wars idea of empathy and the value of being aware of other people's pain and situation. So like a practical level where Mando is protecting the baby, but you also get the sense really, I mean, from his backstory and from the shot at the end of chapter one, right? That he has empathy for this small, what he thought was defenseless thing that the whole galaxy is trying to murder.
Yeah.
And then obviously the baby is developing empathy for Mando, I think.
Absolutely. And I think there's empathy to be found in the Jawa situation, even though whether or not he fully learns the lesson, that head shake definitely is, you know, I went through all that for that, for the egg. But yeah, that's what it goes beyond just he's got to learn to be, you know, use other ways. That's part of it.
Yeah.
But when Quill's talking to him, it's like, no, you negotiate with Jawas. This is their life.
Yeah. This is see that from their perspective.
See it from their perspective. Seeing things, you know, yes, there's a lot of empathy running through this. I think that's a pretty powerful theme. The connection and finding yourself connected with something bigger than yourself.
Yeah.
And what that might mean. I think that's something that could emerge a little bit more. But I think that's what I keep focusing on. It's not just a simple morality choice play of you like this baby and do you want money for it or not? What are you going to do? It's the dawning that he is Mandalorian has taken his first steps into a larger world.
Yeah.
And I think he's starting to feel it and know it and what that's going to do to him.
Yeah.
A simple bounty hunter.
Yeah, somebody wants to be a simple bounty hunter if he can. Yeah, I think what you're talking about is really powerful because it ties into a large Star Wars idea that I think gets repeated here, which is the mechanical versus the organic.
Yeah.
You know, it's the targeting computer versus trust your feelings, trust the Force. And this episode is entirely built on his armor is failing him.
Yeah.
Repeatedly. His weapons are failing him when he's trying to fight the Mudhorn. Mm-hmm. His ship got torn apart. All of the mechanical tools that he relies on are failing him.
Yeah.
And he is only alive because this luminous little being tapped into something much greater and more powerful.
Mm-hmm.
And then even without that, everything you're talking about with Quill of like, no, 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 no. Just ask them what they want. Take a deep breath and do some labor instead of just you know, a lot of it is that very take a deep breath, breathe,
see yourself.
Yeah, look at the part of you that is you, not can I use my flamethrower or my cord to get out of this?
Yeah.
What can you do?
You're right, because none of it worked.
Yeah.
Other than a couple of cold disintegrations, none of it worked.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it worked for a little while.
Yeah.
And man, the remote control on that Yoda baby bucket.
Yeah.
I definitely being able to swipe it.
Man. I want one of those.
Yeah, I want to be carried around in one of those.
Mm-hmm.
Any big directorial choices or moments that jumped out at you? You mentioned the humor. Anything else?
The humor. I'll mention again, but a highlight. I really like the decision to very clearly show the action from Baby Yoda's point of view.
Yeah.
Over his head, over his fuzzy little cute little ears and head. Just to be a drove that just kept driving home that point that this creature was connecting with Amanda and seeing, having, like you said, the empathy, but just seeing what was needed in a situation. I really like that choice. And again, the overall choice that they're just doing with the show of only focusing on the Mando right now.
Yeah.
I mean, I got to think that might change, but I kind of hope it doesn't.
Yeah. I mean, I think it might expand a little bit, but I don't think we're ever going to go super far away from him. It would be amazing if we never really go away from him, if we never cut to the client in Moff Gideon having a side fight, you know, that we only are aware of it if Mandalorian is in the scene or about to enter the scene.
Yeah, which means he's everything we want to learn, he's going to have to learn.
Yeah.
And I really hope they stick with that.
Yeah.
You know, I really hope they do. So that was apparent here. Yeah, the comedy. But yeah, I really loved the decision, the storytelling decision to shoot that from behind his head and all those things.
Yeah, I liked the sheer volume of staring. Like in chapter one, that was an important part of Mandalorian.
Yep.
And in chapter two, it's even more important because we have two mostly nonverbal characters who stare at one another. And, you know, Yoda baby, little cute puppet, is more emotive than the Mandalorian with his mask on.
Yes.
But still has that, like, I'm really intently taking you in.
Mm.
But what exactly am I feeling or thinking?
Yeah.
Like the power of that shot with when the Mando's healing himself and there's like the sparking of the tool. And you see that tool reflected in Yoda baby's eyes. Like, not only is it just the power of, you know, Yabby having those huge eyes to take the world in, but literally being reflective is a great visual way to share that idea of empathy of like, what's happening to you is literally being reflected in my eyes.
Yeah.
You know, builds that connection.
That's great. You know,
that lid closing shot is great.
Yeah. The lid one. Yeah.
And a little bit of like, it almost that weird sort of a slightly slowed down effect when Mando is trying to get up after that last time he's hit by the Mudhorn. Yeah. You get that sense that it's almost being perceived. That's the way it's being perceived by Yoda baby, as you're saying.
Yeah. I love the moment, where he just kind of gives up. There's that paw. Just he's like in the mud, to me, kind of just like almost accepting his death. There's nothing accepting his fight. Like, this is it. This is it for me. I thought it was really good.
Yeah.
And again, shout out to Brendan Wayne, who's doing the stunts, conveying a lot and a lot of that stuff.
Yeah, working really, really well.
Because when he gets all the way to the top, and the Jawas shoot him, and he flops back down.
Yeah.
Love that moment.
Comedy and pain. Yes. Comedy is a Mandalorian's pain. The other thing I wanted to shout out, it's in the script, but it was directed so well, is just realizing it is 12 minutes before a recognized word is spoken.
Yes.
There are grunts and groans and sighs and Baby Yoda coos, but there is not an actual spoken word until 12 minutes into this, and the director does an amazing job of communicating the story just visually. That tracking shot down his arm to the blaster when the little lizards have run away, so he knows the big lizards are coming.
So
just great, great visual storytelling. I really loved how long it was silent, which is an ironic thing to say on a podcast. And with that, we're going to take a quick break. Oh,
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems. But getting therapy has its own problems, too. Like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
And we are back to talk more about that cute, wonderful Yoda baby and the co-star of the show, The Mandalorian, as I think some people are feeling right now. So we're getting into some of our just having fun with it, because I think this show is got a great spirit of fun. Action figure moments.
Oh, yeah.
Again, the creators have said that they were inspired by playing with action figures. Both Favreau and Filoni have said that. To me, it continues to feel that way. For me, the big action figure moment was the Jawa battle.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Right? Because not only is it, again, you know, I keep talking about The Mandalorian as Boba Fett, at some point in Favreau's imagination.
Yeah, yeah,
right?
That's fair.
When he was mysterious.
Yeah.
And obviously he's a very different character now. But to me, I see that and I can just imagine, hey, if there were like 50 Jawas and they were all in their sand crawlers, could Boba Fett get in there? And like people going like, no.
No.
Boba Fett could kill any number of Jawas. Of course. It's so ingrained in that level of playground conversation, that level of, I don't have a movie, I just have a Boba Fett and one Jawa.
Yeah.
What stories do I make up in my mind? And again, I think it's incredibly well told adult version of this.
Yeah.
But it is. The first episode is, what if Boba Fett and IG-88 find a baby Yoda? The second episode was at least partially, can Boba Fett kick 50 Jawas asses?
Yeah.
And
100%.
Yeah, it goes, for me, 100%. It like went, goes down to the specific level of my brother, who is 3 years older than me, would yell at me when I tried to have the Jawa shoot at Han and Luke. He's like, that blaster, which I know is now an ion blaster, is like, only works on droids. You can't shoot Luke and Han with it. Like, it's from my actual childhood. So to see an episode where, like, they set up that there's tech.
Yeah.
There's electronic components in the Mandalorian armor.
Mm-hmm.
He gets up there ready to kick ass, because of course he can kick these little bastards' asses.
Yeah.
And then they all fire their ion blasters at him. And it's literally a debate I had with my brother playing with those action figures. It just, it sings to me.
Yeah. I think that moment, I did the Trandoshan fight, which wasn't a, you know, super great fight by any means, but like, again, what if, you know, Bosk was in action, and what if, you know, these are the things that we saw some of this, and, you know, saw a lot of it, quite frankly, in Clone Wars and Rebels and everything, but to see it in live action makes it kind of more real in your brain. That, no, it was the Jawa moment for me. It was him climbing up. It was the Jawas. I love the moment of them tossing metal down at him. I just think it's, you know, and that's the kind of thing you would imagine.
Right.
You would have your Jawas on top of a sandcrawler if you had a sandcrawler set, throwing it down.
Yeah,
you
know, yeah.
So.
Yeah.
I've always been obsessed with the inside of sandcrawlers. Always wanted to know.
Right. In this, if we still lived in a different action figure world, there would absolutely be a Sandcrawler playset, and you would reckon, and it would say on the back of the box, with weird communication horn, whatever that's called, when the one kind of pipes in.
Like, yeah.
You know, put your Jawas in the observation windows to watch the fights outside. You know, you get to see all the different parts that they added. Like, you know, it comes with, you know, you have to attach the actual fabric to make their patio on top of
it. I love the patio. Love the patio.
Right, the sandcrawler patio.
It's the best. No, these off-world Jawas, they travel and stuff. I would be the one that I would stop the freeze frame of Revenge of the Sith when Anakin was talking to the Jawas.
Yeah.
And look inside, because the doors are open in the back, and be like, what is in there?
What's in there besides,
give me a cross-section book and I want to find out.
I love
seeing the action inside.
Yeah, some cross-section books will definitely be updated. It'll be interesting to me to see how many Mando action figures they put out. We're in a different market these days. Obviously, Black Series is still very, very popular, and, you know, I'm sure there's a vintage. I think I saw somewhere there's a vintage 3 3/4 Mando coming.
Right, of course, it has to be.
But we've seen from the trailers that he's probably going to update his armor, so you got that.
Mm-hmm.
But when he got thrown out of that cave, I was like, man, I want to buy a Mudhorn with exclusive battle-damaged Mandalorian with that messed up, you know, 100%. Chest plate, right?
Oh, falling off. Yeah, have it. Oh, yeah, they need that. And, you know, we're going to probably get a Funko Pop baby Yoda egg or something like that, I'm sure.
Oh, for sure.
I want that. I want that. But, yeah, this would, because it's so inspired by those Kenner figures, the show already, 2 episodes in, is just inspiring. A toy line that doesn't exist yet.
Do you feel like there were marketing teams ready to go saying, how big of an impact is Baby Yoda going to make? Because Star Wars does have a history of marketing the cute things, because that's a part of the market. You know, the Ewoks and the Porgs.
Mm-hmm. I think they obviously knew they had to hold back. But I think if, you know, I don't know. Maybe there's some sites out there and some links to stories or something we're not unaware of. But you got to imagine.
Yeah.
They're sitting on a treasure trove of cute.
Yeah.
Of cute merchandise sales. People love it. It goes to a lot of different demographics of fans and the different kinds of merchandise they will purchase.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah.
Yeah.
Baby Yoda, you're a cash cow.
Yeah. You have the power.
Mm-hmm.
Grizzled weirdo moments.
Yeah.
I mean, it was really, you know, unless we're going to be cruel and called the Mudhorn a grizzled weirdo.
Right.
It was mostly cool.
Yeah, definitely. Quill, Nulty Knot. But I was going to toss a wrinkle in there and say Mando shaking his head at the end makes him kind of the grizzled weirdo in this episode. Quill definitely, the line, I really love the line of, of him telling him, like, you know, if you help, you know, this will go faster. But it's not even chastised. You're not chastised. Just like, it's a lesson for life, isn't it?
Right.
Well, if we work together, if you're willing to help, this will go a lot quicker.
It really is. Like, you know, if you do the chores, we can go see a movie in the afternoon, Mando. Yeah. One that really stuck in my mind, partially, I think, because it is, it really celebrates the Western influences, is the when Mando thanks him for all his help, and he says, thank you for bringing peace to my valley.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, just that word and that idea of, like, I mean, obviously, you know, the, there'll be peace in the valley. But there was just like a that combined with a, you know, I have worked a lifetime to not be in servitude.
Mm-hmm.
In Quill's whole motivation of just like, I'm gonna put my money on you because you're supposed, you come from a long line of mythic ass kickers.
Yeah.
And I just want the trouble gone because I want to sit here in peace and do my work. And it really brought that home of, you know, we jokingly call them grizzled weirdos because there are so many people who have clearly lived a life in our real world who are cast in this. But that's sometimes that power of that, of like, of why those characters are enjoyable to us. You and I go on and on about liking our grumpy middle-aged weirdos. And a part of that is the, I have been kicked around by life, so what's my perspective now?
I'm glad you brought up the piece in my valley line, like, because that was the little side mission, right? The little side mission that Mando was on. But again, just the every line of Quill's is weighted.
Yeah.
Like almost every line is weighted, every nod. And it's, look, it's a big Western thing. Even kind of said, you've brought peace to our town, drifter, stranger, go on. Like they're down to
Who was that mask man?
You know, expecting the man who shot Liberty Valance to start playing in the background. But down to, like, they've got shots, you know, they're doing homages to John Ford shots and single shots in movies. It's Western and unlike... I don't even think I expect it to be this Western.
Yeah.
But going back to the grizzled moment, I mean, he serves that well, and it's such a, it's a powerful, everything he says is powerful. So go watch Quill and learn from Quill, people.
Yeah. Would you count, because we haven't talked about it, would you count the music itself as a grizzled weirdo?
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, the music gets talked about a lot, but probably even not enough, you know, like by every show, every YouTube podcast, anything. Ludwig Göransson's just creating such a feel to the show.
Right.
It's the price of admission for me. It's the ticket I want, is to, just to hear that. I'm doing it bad, but just like.
Yeah, no, but I know what you mean.
Just every time.
It's already, in just a couple of episodes, it's getting that flavor of like the James Bond theme. Mm-hmm. Of like, a character I like is going to do a thing.
Yeah.
And that music, you know, the music has lots of things going on with it. Mm-hmm. I feel like, you know, really when it chooses this well, when it chooses to stay very small and rhythmic versus when it has that, you know, very kind of upbeat for Star Wars, like with the writing, the blurgs in chapter one and getting there as the Razor Crest gets into space in this episode. But just that main sort of Mando theme is getting to me, like, what's troubles Mando going to get into this chapter?
It's another week of adventures.
Getting me excited for that.
So good.
Yeah. One line that I did want to make sure to ask your opinion about, because it stuck with me. I should have probably brought this up when we were back in canon, but I want to be sure to ask you. When the Mandalorian says weapons are a part of my religion, how did that hit you?
It's so interesting. This is a great discussion point. It hit me as somewhat incorrect.
Mm, interesting.
Because go to the Clone Wars, yes, war clearly is part of it. And war is what they're trained to do, and Death Watch and everything. But Duchess Satine, I don't want that ignored. I know Dave Filoni would not ignore it. But you know what I mean? Like she brought in the new Mandalorian way. I know he's old. And maybe that has something to do with why he left or is not on the planet or was not part of whatever happened there, wasn't part of the Great Purge or anything like that. You know, Bo-Katan picked up the Darksaber literally and was kind of continuing her sister's legacy. They're not afraid to fight, clearly.
Yeah.
It's kind of how you use the Force. So I was really interested in that line because it's true in a very flippant this is all you've watched,
right.
And this is the only thing you know of Mandalorian culture, that's what you hear. I have never seen a Mandalorian. You all fight, and you don't. Do you take your helmets off? You know, again, the Horatio Sands character, the at the beginning of the show. Yeah. It's like setting up the Rick Oley exposition of you're tough and you wear your armor and you kill and you murder.
And I heard you never take your helmets off. Is that true? Yeah.
So it fits with that. But it doesn't necessarily fit with the big picture, and I'm wondering if that's what they're going to deal with, if he has to address that in himself at all. I don't know.
Yeah, it felt to me, especially hearing you talk about it, like a building block toward a story of he doesn't know who he is without the trappings.
Yeah.
That he doesn't know who he is with the helmet off. He doesn't know who he is with the weapons, that's the way he's...
Yeah.
Defined himself.
Yeah, that's yeah. Oh,
that, like, who am I when I'm stripped of this? And like that's you know, the power of that Satine story of like... Yeah. We can be a proud and unstoppable species without,
right?
You know, a people without having everything be about violence.
Right.
It's not taking our power away.
So,
it's, you know, sometimes harder to not be violent kind of story. Yeah. And if there's some kind of echoes of that, of he is figuring out who am I if I am stripped of this stuff.
Yeah. Again, is it more just a casual flippant line? Maybe, but not the way this show's built now.
Yeah. Yeah. Or if it is a more of a cultural thing of whatever part of the Mandalorians he's with are like, Steen meant well, but it didn't work out. We should never have laid our arms down in any way. We weren't ready for what was coming.
Yeah.
And we should never lay them down again.
Because, again, it's not exactly wrong what he's saying, but it's a bigger question.
Yeah, it was very, very interesting that. All right, moving on as we begin to wrap up. Predictions for next week. Next chapter. Right?
I couldn't have predicted this if I tried.
Well, because this was kind of... The first chapter had some surprises.
Mm-hmm.
We'd seen a lot of it in a lot of moments in the trailer. And it told us a lot about tone. It told us that it was going to be more about the character of the Mando and revealing who he is, had the Baby Yoda pop. But this chapter was really like... We have heard some rumblings from some people going, nobody knows what this show is about.
Yeah.
And... Yeah. Chapter 2 answered that, like,
yeah,
it is so about this this creature and its meaning in the galaxy.
Yeah, that's why I guess we're, you know, I would not have thought coming out of episode 1 that they're going to stick with the style of just sticking around Mandalorian. I thought that was just a great way to introduce the character. Nope, they're sticking with that. Will they go for week 3? I don't know. When Gina Carano finally shows up as Cara Dune, I don't know. Like, I don't know what they're going to do. So I think to me, it's just this mystery is going to keep unfolding in front of him, and that he will find himself continuously in deeper and deeper and deeper into a wonderful, delicious, thick stew of a plot.
Yeah. Are you excited as a Star Wars fan to have a true feeling of like, we can make some educated guesses based on trailers. We could talk, speculate about what we want.
Mm.
But you truly have, after years of analyzing and talking about Star Wars, they truly have you back on your heels where you're just like, I really don't know what the hell it's going to be next week.
I was shooting something today, covering this show. It's going to be out soon on Rotten Tomatoes. And I was asked off camera, what's the name of the planet? And I went, it's like Arkabeb something 7. And I had to go look it up. Arvala 7. I had to go look it up. And it's not, and I was talking to Perry Nemiroff, who was there, and I said, of Collider, I said, I'm finding myself with this show only taking what is given to me.
Mm.
And
that's a great way of saying it.
You and I talk often of watching new Star Wars, you feel lost. Because, 2 years from now, you'll be like, well, Arvala 7, which is in the, you know.
And this is the name of the valley that Quill lives in. Yeah.
And this, I am just enjoying not knowing and knowing only what the Mandalorian knows or needs to know.
Right.
It's been, because they're making that choice.
You're right. Because it puts you even more in the Mandalorian's perspective of like.
Yeah.
It doesn't say Arvala 7 across the screen because Amanda's just like, it's I don't care. It's where I'm going.
And I'm so glad there isn't a scene. I mean, I want more Werner Herzog scenes, but I'm so glad there isn't a scene with Pershing and him just going, he's going to kill him and I need to study him. And Mando learns later. No, we don't know because he doesn't know.
Yeah, that's so great. So I have a couple of predictions, some of them legitimate, some of them wild.
Okay.
I'm curious to see if Mando will take the Yoda baby directly to the client, or if there will be a detour to seek counsel on what I need to know what I'm dealing with before I walk in.
Okay. I think that's a good, I think he seeks counsel.
Yeah. I'm curious to see, because I mean, it's, we're learning more about this character each episode, yeah. right? So, and we've got those little bits of trailer that we haven't seen yet. We know he's going to,
yeah,
you know, rumble with some remnant stormtroopers at some point. You have to figure that's at. Or is it a, I'm going to stash the baby with a trusted friend, maybe Cara Dune.
Right.
And then I'm going to go talk to the client and say, what the hell is the deal?
Yeah.
You know, but it does feel like next up has to be, unless this is, we could be surprised and like, that was him getting off the planet. Now he's attacked in space for half an hour.
Yeah. Or I was going to say, I don't think he runs straight to the client. And now next episode's going to start with the fade in. He's yelling at the client, you know, like we're yelling at Dr. Pershing. But I love that. I love that. It's hard to pick, but I do. That's the big question. That's a great question. Does he go directly back or does he go seek counsel or some other help? And I'll say counsel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think we're going to learn a little bit more about the actual state of Mandalore in the soon. Next chapter.
The Great Purge.
And StarWars.com put out an article about the Mandalorians. Just kind of a good, real brief summary of here's what's happened to them in the Clone Wars and Rebels. Right. And ends that section by saying the full might of the Empire was brought down on Mandalore.
They do say that.
Yeah, on the StarWars.com article. So I feel like that makes me feel like, okay, we're going to get a little bit more of that story.
Big win.
See if that was a great purge
Big
or not.
Big win for you picking that up there. We'll okay, see. That's great.
We'll see. Final prediction. I think that we will see Yabby excrete an entire frog skeleton.
Look around Yoda's hut a little more closely now.
Oh no. Yeah, I'm thinking of all the various lizards. Little things that were molded into my Dagobah playset. Gosh.
What was that snake for? Was that just lunch? I think he was going to lunch.
That's like a lollipop he's wearing around his neck as an action figure. Amazing. All right. Anything else that you wanted to bring up about this episode before we close with our weird fun question?
No, other than this is just a wonderful, weird little stanza and a bigger song, and I just love that choice and really excited to see what's coming.
Yeah, beautifully said. All right, a weird, fun question to end this discussion of Chapter 2, The Child of the Mandalorian. Not The Child of the Mandalorian, you know what I'm saying. Right. Ken, if Jawas stripped your car, what would you be willing to trade or do for the Jawas to get the parts of your car back?
I mean, I got a lot of Funko Pops. I got a lot of whiskey. I can trade a lot of that. If they want to send me on some sort of mission, I don't know what I can do what the Mando did. So I'm going to have to try to barter with everything that I have.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would start with the toys.
Yeah.
That's usually what I start with.
Yeah.
Yeah. You?
Yeah. I think I would try to give them some of my, maybe my laptop and my phone and figure.
Oh, that's big.
I know, it is big.
Yeah.
I probably wouldn't actually go through with this.
Yeah.
But there's just a little bit of like, wouldn't it be nice if just like a couple of days, I have to be off the grid because like,
yeah,
had to give Jawas my phone.
That's okay.
Otherwise, they're going to make me go try to, I don't know, get some milk from a cougar. That's not even how animals work, but you know what I mean.
The cougar milk egg.
The cougar milk egg. Yeah. That's clearly in Griffith Park.
Suka.
Suka. With that, the Jawas and Ken and I have spoken.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Megan Rinks.
And I'm Melissa D. Montz.
And like every other person with access to a microphone, we started a podcast.
On Mondays, we release Don't Blame Me, which is an advice podcast where listeners call in and we share our thoughts on situations such as what to do if you're going to your boyfriend's family function and you haven't told him that you previously slept with both his twin brothers.
Then on Thursdays, we release our podcast, But Am I Wrong?, where we ethically gossip about pop culture, politics, our lives, and your lives. Listeners write in and we tell them if they're wrong or right in a situation. Are you the hero or the villain?
On Tuesdays and Fridays, we throw in a little something extra as well.
A little something, something. We strive to create a community grounded in activism, mental health, and inclusivity. Think of us as like your blunt, honest friends who give you advice that you need to hear, not what you want to hear. But we're also always rooting for your success. What we lack in credentials, we make up for in
opinions.
We do that in every episode too.
We're professional, unprofessional. So if you're looking for a new slate of podcasts to add to your routine, we're here for you.
Acast recommends.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.